Tell us about the part they leave out. What or who is the snake that bit, or was it killed, or was it carried off, Eurydice?
For a poet, so much comes from insecurity. Poetry is the song of insecurity. Litigious Shakespeare. Poets own everything. As persons, they're not entitled to anything. Baseborn, every one of them. Only by dint of their calling, they feel entitled to all.
For poets, all times are the same time. So they are poor students of causality. They don't know what comes after what.
Ah, they count, but not numbers. They speak, but too many words. Too many words.
Keep talking.
But still too many.
Try to feel from his writing. What is Orpheus? Or who?
He had no son. That is of the essence. No son, 100,000 daughters.
Orpheus? Orpheus. He is himself the snake that bit her foot.
Jealousy is not the truth of it. Fear and insecurity gnawed at him. He snapped at her, she died.
And of me, what shall be spoken? Am I a dead man already? That patch of sunlight I keep studying on the grass, is it under me or over me? I know certain things, memories, make-believe, a crow calling me to now. If this you hear, you're living still, a crow. Information of all kinds from the realms around me I have never entered. I have never been born.
That is the poet's ailment. Constantly picking up this leaf, stone, touching that hand, yearning for his own incarnation. And who can give it to them?
Give it to me. The women are leaving me now, like the gods who shuffle away from Antony under the streets of the city, and I have no streets anymore. They leave me, and that's why I stupidly reach out, because all I know of life is wanting her. And now when she, the one, moves away from me, I lose the clue to going on.
He is not fond of these confessions. That's not what writing is for.
He's always talking as if talk had nothing to do with all that music they keep calling it. Lyric of the lyre. Words spun from tones. Tones primed by words.
No one knows which comes first.
In the museum, there's a marble statue of him, naked, playing a violin. And the violin has no strings. His lips are beautiful. No sound comes out.
No song, word or tone, or none?
He looks out over the summer lawn, quiet as stone.
As if talk had nothing to do with poetry, and poetry nothing to do with going on.
And while he's pondering and muttering, hearing himself think is what we call it, this voiceover murmurs its commentary, a nest of rabbis humming over the book.
Voice over, they say in movies. The voice you hear and think you see.
You cannot see the voice.
You cannot see the voice and live.
And while he stands there and does what he does out loud, and voices fall from everywhere around him.
Eurydice also is there, alive and silent. If silent people can be called alive. Silent in this place and every place she is, because he has never learned to hear her. But still, she moves. We see her dancing. We see her move like someone waking up, someone falling asleep, someone dying, someone waking up again.
But all the while she dances, he thinks she's dead. She's behind him. She dances behind him. Whatever's behind us, we think is dead.
He thinks the snake bit her and she died. He thinks the snake killed her.
Orpheus sometimes thinks he was the snake. He killed her with neglect, put other women before her, sang their songs, put her behind him, and she died. It is his fault.
Orpheus other times thinks he was not at all the snake. The snake was someone else, a sly adulterer who carried her off to his sleazy realm and made her forget him, made her put him behind her. It must have been his fault.
And other times, Orpheus thinks Eurydice was the snake herself. Her own wandering ways took over, so she wandered off, slithered away and was gone, over the hill, beyond the forest, across the sea, dead to him, dead with distance.
He must have bored her with his endless verbiage. Wordplay, heart songs, or not held her tight enough, or held too tight. His fault.
Orpheus thinks all these things, and can't decide. He can't make up his mind.
A poet can't make up his mind. The poem makes up his mind for him.
Some say Eurydice killed herself. Some say Orpheus killed her. Some say she never died.
A myth is what happens to the mind when it stops thinking.
The orderly wrongness of being me. Chided by birdsong early. The squeal of night things ever after. The fault is mine.
He is the guilty one, the pointer out, explainer, child babbling in the back seat, the names of all the things they pass.
How irritating, maddening really that is, the ceaseless chatter of a mind trying to confirm its own existence by naming all the things it sees, the things it wants.
How irritating the ceaseless commentary of poetry.
No wonder everybody loves me. And nobody really loves what I speak.
Broad, Ure, Justice, Dike. What shall we make of her? An honest, broad-faced wench, all too soon promoted to alterity.
It is so hard to be somebody's mother.
Meantime, in silly urgency, he craves Ismia, snake-hipped, virgin harlot, temple prostitute.
But shouldn't he be the worshipper?
Endless confusions of Orpheus. His mistakes interest him. He finds his starting place in wherever, in whatever goes wrong.
He makes us listen ever after to what baffles him, happy, humming them under our breath.
For it was breath where it all began, when it was any good at all.
Some say art smothers breath, blinds the eyes, stuffs the ears.
If he thought it into place, it stank like the dead meat of that turtle whose shell he lifted so painfully off, had made the first sound box for his lyre, because meat is what thinks, but breath is what speaks.
Orpheus sneers at the sophists. These men, and it is mostly men, isn't it, who do philosophy, alas? These men are silenced by ideas, as adolescent boys drown all night in visionary thinking, for which no word can ever speak.
What is vision? Seeing the unseen?
This body will not dance. They dance around me, all around me, all the ones I thought I meant, but they return. They mean me now. And the dance wills body. Oh, all these ones are not the one. She was the only one who brushed aside my words and smiled and loved me despite my music. For her, I was what so few poets dare to be, a human on earth, stuck here, glad to be, thick with breakfast, working for a living and grumbling at the weather, nobody special, hence genuine. I was that one to her. Without her, I am not that to myself, and come to be like all the other geniuses, ridiculous and noble, a marble statue to my own identity.
Writing is his mode of being.
Slow opening of ancient files, police digging in the cellar.
All I am is bone of what there was.
Mythology lets you talk about yourself unashamed, shamelessly even, like Oedipus babbling in the woods.
Mythology lets everybody know the monster that I am. And what I've done with this body of mine, she gave me
one last cry. Mother! I have heard that dying men call out to their mothers, but my mother told me the last word she heard her mother calling out was her name, Maggie, Maggie. And the street was full of snow, and the doctor was walking away. Maggie for Margaret, from a Mediterranean root, meaning pearl.
Everything comes from the sea. The water that snakes its way from the mountain springs, from the monsoon rains, from the clouds' intimate rubbing on the hills, snakes its way down and fills the sea to its brim. We are the brim we live on, ill-balanced between the elements.
It's when I feel you so close in dream that waking, I most feel I've lost you. I have a feeling I could bear, but the both together slay me. So I tied a rope around your hips and drew you to me. There was not slack left enough to tie a knot, so instead you looped the rope over your wrists, held out to me. This I knotted loosely and pulled you after me from the dream. The stories say I looked back and lost you. Nonsense. Looking never lost the looked at. What happened is I opened my eyes on the hillside up from dream and lost you in the glare of common daylight. And when I close my eyes, I swear you still are there, right here, I mean, between all my past and that slim knife blade of the future, just as you are in all my poetry.
Orpheus is consoling himself. He picks up the sheaf of his recent work and thumbs through it, looking for her. He's like an old rabbi busy at his pill pool, trying every dodge to find her, her in every line. Shakespeare put beautiful poems in the unlikeliest mouth. Character is his excuse for poetry. Orpheus, earlier, dared to
put songs in no one's mouth, yet we can hear them sing, and by such empty song he forced us to pay mind.
But who said that? And what mind is it that songs browse to attend? At last, at least, the current runs after a day or two of pleasing lyric sputter. Now down your harps, ride the torpedo, full seed abaft,
for the woman was always behind me. That is the secret. The word almost, that I was always turned from her, but she was always, I thought, in my mind. But she was nowhere but where she was. Now I know better. She was my mind.
With this kind of funereal philosophy, he could almost conquer silence.
When I turned back that famous day to look at her at last, I was looking at my mind. Nothing happened.
Nothing happens. As the lamas say, when your mind looks at your mind, the story ends.
Narration is confusion. Nothing happened.
The myth says this, then that. But you know what myths are. The lovely lies that keep us half awake. The myth called it death.
As if losing the story was losing the woman. But we know better.
We never know who is speaking. Who knows? Who knows better? And what is known? Is that also dancing? Now here and now lost, found in some romantic shade? But who is speaking?
The woman. Even this one, even the she of all my poetry, the woman is not life. She gives it, surely, always, to everyone who dares to be born, and sometimes even to his poetry. And she takes it away sometimes. But she is not life. She is the mind from which life spills, the matrix from which life comes as an almost unnoticed consequence of her awareness. Of awareness.
A fall, perhaps, an Eden in the eye, where awareness seeks an object to be of.
This goes beyond my element, which is to sing what I don't know and lick my half-guesses loud enough for you to hear who are not she, not Eurydice. Are you?
Is every loss the same loss? The shadows into which she falls are the same everywhere.
That shadow color, dark lymph of the world, takes her.
Nothing is lost from the world, but she is lost. She is lost only from you, not from herself, not from everyone.
To be a self is to lose the rest.
Be pretentious, little poet. Push your fancy far as you can. Be what you pretend to be.
Then unmake the fancied image later and go free.
You must have a self before you can abandon the self.
There is no self, only imputation.
Oh, indulge the imputation. Be a pirate a little while, a diva, a deva, a boon companion of foxes and wolves, even some man's wife, and then get over it.
The self is a sickness from which we can recover.
He sang, but the self he lost was not his own.
The self is a sickness from which no man can recover.
The tragedy of Orpheus. The argument, seeking to sing away his self, by distraction and mischance, he sang away the other.
What could distract anyone from the other? Isn't the other all there is out there?
Who are these people reading me with such big eyes? The oak tree pierces my song. The birds are busy at it, building and breeding things.
Things he knows nothing of. Orpheus has no children, only songs, only the sounds of all the birds, all the people doing what he does not know. Did the birds read him?
Did they rend him? Do we tear apart the mind of what we read? Our fitful eyes and lusts tear up the quiet suchness of the text?
We always hear that girls tore him apart. Aceres, Bachlai, Bachante, Agralis.
Oh, he is torn apart by what he remembers. All the images that crowd his mind, crowd out his soul. His mind was in his eyes, and his heart was in his voice. He watched all of them, all the women, and his voice called out to each of them as if he meant her and only her. He couldn't tell the difference.
And each one heard his song as if it meant only her. How could it be different? Isn't that what song is or does? A singling out of everyone, everyone who hears it, knows it's just for him.
This entryway is meant for you alone. My song's a door, open only for you.
Then the women rose, took off their clothes, turned their backs on him. The song froze in midair. Some looked back over their shoulders to see whence that silence came. And one alone did praise him for some new trick it sounded like he'd learned. And she alone stepped near and closed the door.
Was that your Eurydice? Already he forced himself to forget, studied instead the wood grain of the door behind which she is hidden.
They all hide from me. That's all the world has in it now, the women and the grain of wood. Everything else is marginal.
Imaginal, he means. Can song sing what no one sees? Even if in the shuttered attic of his thinking he saw, would we believe?
The wood of the door she slams in his face reveals the sinuous, continuous writhing of time through the matter world. Sleek as their hips, whose, but they are gone. Intimate as the thoughts she denies him now.
Now is all the eternity he ever has.
All my poems exist just to find out what she thinks.
Why don't you ask her what she thinks?
She doesn't know she's thinking. Nobody does. Only the language knows.
And when time withers and the door crumbles, splinters and honey-colored dust on the floor of the mind?
But that is not Wood's way, goes on standing. Word's way, signifying its ancient life still visible.
All such images, lover, are shallow consolation. The whole world can't console you for this one slim shadow who slipped away from you now, as shadows blend into shadows, seamlessly indifferent, so no one hears you.
Oh, song. Oh, sweet interference with how things are. I send you to her, to distract her.
Once he started thinking, he stopped listening.
The girl stepped back into the wood and was gone.
The man died into the poet. The maybe died into the yes.
Yes is dangerous. Yes is a vine. Grows quick round a woman's feet.
She thinks it's a snake around her ankle. Then she doesn't know what to think.
Every affirmation drags her down. Everything a man says about a woman loses her.
She dances around him. Her hips cry out, "Your syntax slew me from what I was to what you saw." Her hair a whirl between his eyes and the lamplight cried, "Every image you affirmed was stolen from my mind. You leave me bare, swept clean by music."
Then her bare feet padded, empty, 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 empty.
A girl is need, a man is seed.
In his dream, she lay across his knees like a koto played beneath his fingers, turning contour to tone, pressure, percussion, and no more harp. Her voice, long muffled, sang out too.
The time of the lyric has gone past. You need more fire and less air.
Too many words, still too many words.
Just keep talking, maybe it will make sense. But was he dreaming all the while?
So much for listening. You need a harp to hear with, just as you need, he needed, a pen to think.
But thought is its own instrument, she thought. And he thought she had learned that news in hell, where it is too dark to read or write.
And that is why the body is.
Always we see her moving, never still. She is the wind itself through his dying forest, the drowned pine woods alphabetic against the sky, the water brooks trying to bring his dead soil back to life. The elements work against themselves in him.
He thought such things about himself. When he sometimes sees the shadow of her dancing.
Let me tell you everything I know. Tell everything you know, only after you've said everything else. That is, tell what you don't know. That's the only thing words are good for. Or otherwise, how will I, listening, ever know who I am? We exist at the intersection of two ignorances, at the place called knowing.
For body is the first language, and at last the only one. We only need to speak because we're separate. Any word is a scar on the abiding silence.
No wonder she's gone. She sees that he's in love with separation.
He thinks she hides in every woman he might meet. Stares brusquely through the forest of her eyes to catch a glimpse of his Eurydice.
Who, of course, was never his. Justice, broad or slender, belongs to no man, least of all a man with words in his mouth. Justice flees when juries talk.
My mother. Who was my mother? Taught me talking is a sin and writing worse. She tried so tenderly to protect her poor son from what I would say, from ever believing what came out of my mouth.
Sometimes I think that with the Bible already written in the rock, the axes in crystal, and the molecules of actual things. Maybe every human word is blasphemy.
And who is this, anyhow, man?
Silence is his breath. He is the one who listens for us, who listens out loud.
Why do we need to hear what no one says?
We listen to him listening. We help his words to find their silences again.